Good afternoon. My name is Hock Choa, and I shall be reading from The Battle of Chibi. This is a retelling of parts of a classic of Chinese literature. You may know it. It's called The Romance of the Three Kingdoms, which is a very long book. It's usually published in 3, 4, 5 volumes. It has 120 chapters. The Battle of Chibi consists of 23 of those chapters, selected from mostly the first 55 chapters of The Romance of the Three Kingdoms. And it tells of a sort of significant battle. A movie has been made of it called Red Cliff. It's directed by John Woo, who directed Crouching Tiger, Sleeping Dragon, one of that thing. Crouching Animal, Sleeping Animal. Anyway, this is the second cover that I found for it. The first I made up because after sending letters to 20 over, the recommended process is find an agent. So I tried finding an agent. I got some polite replies and then mostly no replies. So I wound up self-publishing. And the first edition, I used the template on CreateSpace to create the cover. I didn't like it, so last year I found a cover artist. I found the background picture that I wanted to use, so on and so forth. And so here it is. I should have brought the other one so you can see the before after. Anyway, I've selected 5 passages. This, who knows how long it goes. The first passage is from the very beginning of the book. I believe that the book grew out of a foundation of the Chinese kept annals of everything, of every empire, dynasty. For this classic, they were fortunate in that some editor collected a whole bunch of poems, episodes, street entertainment, fragments of opera, and put it all together. And anyway, I'm reading from the first chapter, and it actually begins, believe it or not, with a statement of what the author thinks history is about. When the empire is divided for long, it unites. When united for long, it falls apart. This is the nature of the history of all under heaven. Thus, after 500 years of the Zhou dynasty, 7 kingdoms went to war with each other for 250 years until the Qin dynasty unified China. After the fall of Qin, the kingdoms of Chu and Han struggled until the founder of the Han dynasty put down all rebellions and all under heaven was again united. 200 years later, after a rebellion and brief interregnum, the Han dynasty was restored and lasted until the Emperor Liu Xie was taken hostage and the empire was divided into the 3 kingdoms, Shu, Wei, and Wu. The view of history is not a single progress, a moment towards the idea of progress, towards liberal democracy. It's a view that history is sort of like a pendulum. It swings from one extreme to the other. Well, the three kingdoms battled, one of them is the kingdom that was considered the loyalist kingdom, and the leader was Lord Liu Bei. He has the same surname as the Han Dynasty, so he was considered the most legitimate of the three kingdoms that were fighting. Nevertheless, he was probably the weakest of the three. He hoped to compensate for that by having superior champions by his side, and the story follows three of them, and also to have a superior strategist. So he searched widely for someone to advise his campaigns. And this chapter, chapter 8, is entitled "Like Fish Seeking Water." That's how desperately a military warlord looks for a strategic counselor. The first counselor he has actually didn't turn out very well. His name was Su Shu, and this is Su Shu's story. Su Shu fell afoul, fell into a trap that Cao Cao, the strongest of the three contenders, the strongest warlord, he claimed the title of prime minister. So Su Shu's mother was captured by Cao Cao, and Cao Cao forged a letter over her signature to Su Shu, saying that, you know, I'm now in this such and such a city, and I'd like to see you. When Su Shu found his mother, he prostrated himself in front of her in the hall. She was astonished to see him and demanded to know what he was doing. Su explained, "I was in Xinye on Lord Bei's business when I received your letter. I came as soon as I could." His mother became very agitated. She struck her fist on the table and scolded him. "Disgraceful son, you wandered through the rivers and lakes for so many years. I thought you had at last come to your senses when you joined Lord Bei. I see now that I was mistaken. You must have taken a wrong turn somewhere. A man cannot serve two masters with proper loyalty and filial devotion. How can you not know that Cao Cao is a traitor and master of deceit? Lord Bei is known for his humanity and honor on the four seas. He is a member of the imperial clan, and you were in his service. Now, on the basis of a forged letter that you did not trouble to verify, you have abandoned the light for the darkness. You have walked into this evil camp. How stupid can you be? I cannot bear to imagine what you thought you were doing. You are a disgrace to your ancestors. The world would be better if you had not been born." Su Shu lay prostrate during this tirade. He did not dare lift his head. He barely breathed. By the way, I didn't make this up. This was something I translated. But as I wrote this or prepared this, I had this vision of my grandmother berating, and I've seen my grandmother berating my cousins, my uncles. It sounded somewhat familiar. Shortly after she left, a servant came rushing to tell him that his mother had hanged herself. Shu went to see if she could still save her, but it was too late. Poems have been written about this mother's view of her son's action, such as the following. And this is a very famous poem. In fact, in my blog, I present three different translations of it. This is my own. Formidable Mother Sue honors 1,000 ancestors. Implacable in her principles, she thus nurtures her family. She instructs her children to stay true despite hardship, to keep their spirit unshakable as the hills and mountains, to maintain their integrity from the bottom of their hearts. She cherishes Liu Bei, despises Cao Cao. She is not intimidated by religious trappings. She disdains the executioner's acts. She fears only that her offspring might disgrace their ancestors. She would rather die than witness such disgrace. She would break her loom and endure the indignities of war. Born to this honorable name, she would lay down her life for it. Formidable Mother Sue honors 1,000 ancestors. I'm going to skip ahead to the fourth selection. And this is after the battle, there is mopping up to do. And so the two of the three kingdoms join forces to fight the third, and they win. And this is as far as the movie goes. So this book goes a little beyond that. They figure out the most likely route for Cao Cao to take in order to escape from the Battle of Red Cliff. Lord Guan had been on the side watching a whole bunch of other champions assigned to various tasks. And he felt that he had been looked over, and he said, well, what about me? And Zhuge Liang, one of the masterminds of the battle, said, well, you know, if you really are serious, this is what we need you to do. And Lord Guan said, all right, I'm willing to do that. But what if Cao does not take that road? Zhuge Liang said, okay, I'll put it in writing that he will. This remark amused Lord Guan. Zhuge Liang added, be sure to take the smaller and higher of the two roads and collect some firewood and straw to burn when you see Cao Cao approaching. That will draw him to the road. He objected. When Cao Cao sees the smoke, he will think this is an ambush being prepared, and that will scare him away. Zhuge Liang said, ah, you need to be more devious. When Cao Cao sees the smoke, he will think of the military strategy of concealing weakness with the appearance of strength, and take this for an instance of such a ploy. That is certain to draw him onto that road. Lord Guan acknowledged his orders and left with 500 elite swordsmen. After he left, Liu Bei said to Zhuge Liang, my younger brother is the very model of honor. I too fear that he will let Cao Cao escape. Zhuge Liang said, I have consulted the astrological charts, and there is no indication that fate has determined Cao Cao will be captured. So, this is to give Lord Guan the opportunity to earn merit with mercy. That is also a good thing. And in the end, this little episode, Lord Guan faces Cao Cao and he lets him escape. And he comes back, and you'll have to read that. But fast forwarding through another couple of years, the two kingdoms that win obviously can't stay together because they are still deeply suspicious of each other, until finally Zhou Yu, who is the heart and soul of one of those two kingdoms, dies. And Zhuge Liang, who had been the target of his plots to get rid of Zhuge Liang, goes to his funeral. With all that he had prepared for the funeral, and there he at Zhou Yu's tomb, he prostrated himself. He poured a libation of wine in front of the grave and knelt as he read out his lamentation. "Alas, Zhou Yu, to die so young. The measure of our days is doled out by heaven, but how I grieve now. My heart aches as I pour this wine for you. May your noble soul relish it again and again. I mourn the young boy who unfailingly respected his elders, who was generous to the needy and himself lived humbly. I yearn for the young man who wrestled 10,000 li with the Peng, magical creature, who escaped his lord, who helped his lord establish the kingdom of Wu. I cherish your steadiness of purpose at the distant garrison of Bachiu, a cause of concern to some and a warning to rebels. I mourn for your handsome bearing and brilliant marriage to the younger Qiao. You became son-in-law to an imperial minister and were worthy to assert yourself at court. I grieve over the loss of your measured spirit that discerned the occasion to admonish or oppose. Your wings did not droop at the onset and were fully extended in the end. I mourn for the Lord of Poyang, who resisted the guile of Jiang Gan. He was smooth and wily, but did not sway you from your great-hearted aspiration. I bemoan the passing of your splendid talent to combine grand strategy and detailed tactics. You attacked with fire and followed through with tenacity. I think of those years when you strode with majesty and purpose. I weep your untimely death. Let my tears water the earth where I lie prostrate. Such loyalty of heart, such boldness of spirit. Your life ended at 36. Your honor lives for 100 generations. Our separation causes me pain. A thousand pent-up memories cannot find expression. Left alone, my spirit mingles with unending sorrow. Great heaven itself is dark. Three armies are in shock. Your Lord wails, your friends weep. I am without talent, yet you coaxed me to frame strategies with you. Together we helped Wu and repulsed Cao, assisted Han and upheld Liu. You gave your all to help your companions. You knew when to hold back or retreat, whether to reflect or to worry. Alas, Zhou Yu, the living and the dead are eternally separated. I hope to preserve your faithfulness from dark extinction. Your soul, as if it still lives, will be reflected in my heart. Who among all under heaven would know my mind so well? I lie prostrate with pain, alone, and beg you to accept this offering." As a later poet sighed, "Nanyang's Wulong slept and did not awaken even when sunlight fell on the city wall." This is about Zhuge Liang, whose nickname was Wulong, Sleeping Dragon. "Blue heaven, having created Zhou Yu, why must Earth produce Zhuge Liang?" Don't know if we have time, but I take a question, or we can continue on the floor. Yeah. I don't know. Somebody who knows Chinese will have to go back and see. I did do the translation. I thought I was going to die. At least the first month, it was horrible. It took me hours to get to one page. And then it after a while, it took me hours to get through one chapter. So it got better. But looking back, I see those black three-ring binders. And so I know I did it, but I have no recollection of how I did each one of those. And if I had to go back, I wouldn't be able to do it. Yeah. But, you know, I was young and foolish, and I thought I should do it. So, yes. Yeah, it was not. I was not trying to come up with the best translation ever. I just felt that disappointed in the translations that I found. There are two translations. It's not like the Greek. I did another of my books. This is about a Greek thing, and the Greek plays. Every 15, 25 years, there's a new translation. In Korea, I'm told that the Romance of the Three Kingdoms is translated every 15, 25 years. The Koreans are interested. I imagine the same might be true of the Japanese. Good question, because we have lots of dialects. And in fact, my mother and my father spoke different dialects. But my mother was a nurse, and she spoke every dialect that, you know, she coped. However, they both spoke English. So when I grew up, they spoke to me in English. We should let Will do his thing with the other whatever. I'd be happy to continue chatting with you off the stage. Probably want to turn the lights on so people can get their stuff.
He was so excited. Oh, word. Thank you.